20,000 pages. I was just listening to Donald Trump, and he said that they have cut so many regulations that has cut up 20,000 regulations. That is absolutely amazing. What's even more shocking is that there are still regulations in place after ripping up 20,000 regulations. I don't even know how many regulations we have, but that is impressive, amazing, and depressing all in the same time. Welcome to How to Build a Tent, the podcast on how to make you successful. My name is Matt Williams. Thank you for listening to the show. My face is all cut up. My son has the sharpest freaking nails in the world. I was changing him the other day, and he stuck his finger up my nose and cut it with his razor-sharp nails. My son might be Wolverine. It's crazy. My face is all cut up. It looks like I'm in an abusive relationship. So if you will see me walking around and there's cuts all over my face, maybe you'll see me in the airport flying to Atlanta today and you see my face, just, you know, pretend like they're not there and just say, hey, good to see you, and try not to stare at all the cuts that my son cut up. I heard that there's been some issues on the Fight Laugh Feast Network with getting our podcast out. So I hope that you are hearing this. I hope that the issues are resolved and it didn't cause you too much stress, turmoil, or anxiety. I know that you get in a routine and you're listening to the show, and then if it's just not there, your life is empty inside. No, I'm just kidding. That's not, I hope that is not true. No show is that important. But again, I do seriously do apologize for the Fight Laugh Feast channel issues that we were having. Before we get into the show, but I guess I should, the perfect segue to apologizing for the Fight Laugh Feast issues is to say we are part of the Fight Laugh Feast Network. Go over to fightlaughfeast.com, put in HGBT in a memo field, and you'll get a HGBT mug on top of all the other great benefits. I saw an email while I've been traveling with a list of the new subscribers. Thank you guys so much for signing up. I really appreciate it. And for those of you who are already signed up, that is just absolutely amazing. That it really is just an encouraging, helps keep this show going. It is what motivates me to do the show while I'm traveling in a hotel room or at a friend's house. Now, let me just tell you this. If you have the opportunity and the heart and desire to host people so that they don't have to stay in a hotel, it is such a blessing. Let me tell you, when you start traveling, maybe it's the first time you travel, maybe you got a job where you're being able to travel for business for the first time. It's exciting. It's fun. You get to stay in a hotel. They have those cute little lotions. And, you know, maybe if you stay at like the DoubleTree, they'll give you a chocolate chip cookie at the counter, unless you start thinking digital and you are using your app to check in. Then somehow you don't get the cookie. For some reason, the cookie just doesn't make it through the app to your bedroom. But it's exciting when you're traveling for the first time. But when you get to a certain point when you're just traveling and traveling, the excitement of hotels really wears off. And when you are able to stay at somebody's house, especially if someone you know, and or somebody just that is incredibly hospitable and that is really just thinking of you, it is such a blessing. So I don't want to embarrass anyone that I'm staying at their house, but thank you so much. You know who you are for your hospitality. You've totally blessed me and my family, because for those of you who don't know, I'm traveling with my wife and son, and it has just been such a great blessing. So thank you so much for your hospitality. It is, the kindness that you guys have shared to me has been amazing, and I wish I never had to stay in a hotel again and I could just stay with people all the time. It's so worth it. So that's about that. All that to say is, if you have the gift of hospitality, please use it. It is such a blessing to people that are traveling, that are working hard, that are in the grind, and I just feel like my job gets a lot easier when the body of Christ is working, right? I mean, that's the dream, right? That all of us that are in the Christian community are using their gifts to exemplify Christ and to portray Christ not only to the world but to ourselves and to each other, and to get a further understanding of the nature and the character of God. There's a lot of mergers going on right now. I don't know if you've heard of any. I got kind of excited. I have some stock in Raytheon, and I was excited. But it turns out the investors aren't really thrilled about this Raytheon-United Technologies merger. It's going to be a very interesting play. That's a stock. It's a stock purchase. I think they said that Raytheon shareholders get 2.4 shares for every share that they have of Raytheon. Which, I mean, I would think that the Raytheon stock is going to explode, and it did on the news, but then it kind of dropped. And I'm kind of holding on to it still to see what's going to happen. I don't know if the market really knows how to view this merger yet. But one of the biggest losers, besides those of us who have been holding Raytheon stock, which, again, I just completely don't understand at all, is GE, a lot of people are saying. They manufacture plane engines. They have about one-fifth of the R&D that this new company, Raytheon Technologies, you see what they did there? They took Raytheon United Technologies, dropped the United, and now it's Raytheon Technologies. They have five times the R&D research that GE has, which when you are trying to come out with innovative, competitive products, especially for the military, for planes, and there is just a competition for efficient, powerful engines, when you are working off of one-fifth the R&D that your competitors have, you're in a big amount of trouble. But the good thing is GE does make a lot of money off the maintenance of the airplanes, and I almost wonder if they are going to be able to pivot to a maintenance consulting kind of company, kind of like IBM. They moved to a consulting kind of company, and they completely pivoted when they realized that they did not have a competitive value proposition anymore to give to the market. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens with GE. And now I know it's not exactly GE. I think it's called GE Aviation or something. It's a spinoff of GE, I believe. But it will be really interesting to see what they do here, because it looks like this merger is going to be threatening their existence, which isn't good in the long run, because, hey, we like a lot of competition. It's going to help keep plane ticket prices down. It's going to help keep military spending down, things like that. But at the same time, GE may need to be pivoting and looking for new ways to provide value besides manufacturing plane engines, because they are going to be left behind and not be able to keep up with not enough cash to spend to keep up with companies like Raytheon Technologies and Boeing. I mean, Raytheon Technologies is going to be like the number two to Boeing. So they're going to be the two big dogs in the industry. But I think this is going to be a great example of how a business needs to stay flexible and be able to respond to different factors, that even if you're not really like the reason for it, like bad things can happen to you in a business, bad things can happen to you, to the company you work for, that aren't your fault, that aren't the business's fault, but it's just how the market goes, and you need to be able to respond to them. And one of the key ways to be able to respond to these things well is to prepare for these kinds of things, anticipate them. Try to think about what would be the worst case scenario for your competitors to do. What would be something that you would be exposed to vulnerabilities on, and how do you prepare? How do you hedge against that? How do you put yourself in a position where that is not going to be such a dramatic thing? Oh, excuse me. I just had a chip stuck in the back of my throat. I had to miss lunch, so I was eating unhealthy chips, and apparently it's not conducive for a podcast as well, so excuse me for that. But you want the more that you as a business leader, either your own business, your startup, or your career, the more that you can prepare, anticipate, and plan, strategize the different scenarios that can be thrown your way that maybe is not in your control at all. But being able to react and prepare and have a plan for when those things that aren't controlled happen, where it can be mitigated and you can manage those crises better, and you're going to be far better off than others who are impacted by the same thing. Maybe it's even a natural disaster like a storm or a hurricane, an earthquake. What will you do when your office is ruined? Will you have a plan where your employees can work from home? Do you have a conference call number that you can call in? Like even something like that is important to be prepared for. Another company that is just, I don't understand at all, it's called Beyond Burger. It's a plant-based meat substitute. I mean, come on. do we really think that this is going to be a sustainable thing? This has to be a fad, right? People, I don't know. Okay, maybe it is good. I don't know. I have no desire to taste it whatsoever. I am happy with my meat. I'm going to eat meat every day until I die. Lord willing, I don't know the purpose of living without meat. I'm just kidding. But apparently it's a $1.44 billion market to have a replacement for meat. I don't know about that, but it seems pretty crazy that people would want, I guess if you're a vegan for health issues or whatever, but I just don't see it as a big market. I don't know, but apparently some people are liking it and it's doing a lot better than what people thought would happen of it. So what is happening? Big players like Nestle and Tyson Food are coming out with their own versions of Beyond Burger, their own meat substitutes. And this is something for us to keep in mind that is important for us to think about when we are deciding if we're starting a business, what industry to go into, what products to offer, is who are my competitors? Who could potentially be my competitors? Now, if you're just doing a side hustle, this probably isn't such a big concern for you because you're not looking to scale this. But if you are like a small business, an entrepreneur, a startup, where you're wanting to go big, that you're wanting to grow and scale this thing up to several rounds of investment, you're going to want to eventually go public. Well, one of the things you really need to consider is the potential competitors you have or the actual competitors you're going to have. Because there's nothing more frustrating than finding a product fit, a value proposition to customers that works, that fits, that is exciting, that you're growing, that you have exploding growth. And then all of a sudden to see these competitors or potential competitors noticing and swoop in and do the same thing that you do with a lot more money behind them. It's going to be really hard to win. Nestle, Tyson Foods have tons of money. They are international companies. And Beyond Burger, although a first mover in the market, is going to have a lot of competition. They're going to have to do a lot more spending. Their margins are going to come down. And who knows if it's going to be a sustainable business model with all of these other competitors in the market. And it's important, and we take this as a lesson, to really think through beforehand that even if you would be successful, because like, right, it's impossible to know if you're going to be successful or not. It takes a lot of work. There is a big chance that you're not going to be successful. But on the small, slim chance that everything goes your way, that you do start becoming successful, what are the chances of competitors coming in and kicking you out of the market? That might be a good, big discouraging thing. I mean, it's like one of those things with like taxes. Are taxes discourage people from taking risks because the payoff isn't as much as if there wasn't taxes? This should be in that category as well, is thinking about competitors in the industry or potential competitors in the industry is limiting the success that you're going to have because you're not going to have as much of a length of time without competition where you're going to have larger margins. At best, you're going to have smaller margins. You're going to have to spend more to advertise, to compete, and to hold your ground and play defense and try different tactics to continue to grow. And so that's something very important that I think sometimes we just overlook when we're doing our market analysis, when we're doing our research. Like, oh, there's so much opportunity here. And there might be opportunity here. Maybe you do explore a new niche, a new value proposition that no one else has, that no one else has seen. But it doesn't mean that other people can't take it, especially in the food industry. Now, if you have a patent, if you have something unique, if you have a strategic advantage that people can't easily copy or won't be able to figure out for long periods of time, this isn't so much of an issue. But this is why it's so hard to get into the food industry. It's so hard to get into the food and beverage industry as a whole. It's because it's easily replicated. Now, it might not be the exact same, like Coke versus Pepsi, but they're close enough where if someone with the right amount of money and the right marketing strategy can move in on your piece of the pie and really impact your sales. And that is another reason that I kind of stay out of the food and beverage business, besides it's really hard work, besides there's just tons of competition already, is as soon as you come out with an energy drink, if you come out with vitamin water, sparkling water, all of those things can be replicated. And they are. When it's proven in the market, the other players come in with their big bank accounts and their marketing, their brand identity, and they swoop in and take your business. So I would really advise you and recommend that you pay attention to that. Another article that I saw, which was funny, but not funny because of the story, was this young Romanian woman thought she had a customer service job in a tech startup, but soon she discovered she was working for a cybercrime ring. Now, that is a very interesting story that I did not think about. When you are looking for your side hustles, you need to do your due diligence to make sure that you're not working for a cybercrime ring. I mean, that's crazy. Never thought that would be possible. Always thought it would be possible that hackers, that fraudsters would try to fraud and to trick me, but I never thought they would use me to do their bidding. And that might be a good warning for all of us to consider as well, and maybe a good reason to go through reputable sites like Upwork, which I highly recommend, by the way. If you can get into Upwork, if you can get the Rising Talent Badge or whatever that's called, and you can start getting some jobs, I would highly recommend that. That has been, I've heard a lot of great things about that. But the reason I bring this story up is not because that's a good warning, which it is, but there's this one line. So in some articles, they have the top of the article that kind of sums up in two or three points the main gist of the article. And this was the atrocious, this was the offensive part to the author about this whole story. Across Eastern Europe, it says, cybercrime villages have proliferated to support the lucrative, tax-free industry of scamming people, particularly in Europe and the U.S., stealing credit card numbers and other schemes. Now, it's not just that, like, or on, in and of itself, they're stealing credit cards and doing other schemes. It's tax-free. And you just know this author is a super liberal that's all about taxes, and there's like some kind of dignity and value in taxing people. And then that's like one of the crimes of this whole, the tragedy of this whole story. It's not just this woman was tricked into committing crimes. It's not just that people are getting scammed out of their credit cards, but they're not even paying taxes. How dare they go without paying taxes? Oh, the horror. Oh my gosh, what are we gonna do? And it's just like, that is the thing you could just see that is boiling the blood of this author. And I just was like dying laughing. I was telling everybody at the house that I was staying at that it was being super hospitable about this. And we all got a really good laugh out of that. Man, I'm telling you, taxes are some kind of sacred cow for way too many people. Like, do you understand that they are forcibly taking your money to go spend it however they want to, and it is rarely on what they say it is? I mean, taxes are no noble thing at all. Charity is noble. Loving people, giving, being freely giving with your own personal resources to people that need it, that is noble. That is a great thing. But letting a central government grow by stealing your money to redistribute it and taking the cream off the top to fund and to get power and to lobby, or not to lobby, but to buy influence and to buy more money and to buy more campaign ads, resources, and all that stuff. There's nothing noble about that. If you have any questions, comments, if you want to reach out to me, if you can even hear me, if you're having any issues with the show, please let me know. Matt@howtobuildatent.com is where you can email. Please subscribe and share the show. Tag the show at How to Build a Tent with on the social media sites, especially mine. That is the site that is not censoring us right now, which is a good thing. I can't believe that YouTube went after Steven Crowder. That has been in the news last week. And I was just kind of reading up on that because I've been kind of out of the news. I've been traveling and working and been in all-day meetings. Man, it is coming out to be an all-out war, and the gloves are coming off. And we need to fight. We need to be prepared. That's why it's important to be investing, to being successful, to supporting conservative Christian programs, shows, and all of the things that you feel God is leading you to, because we are in a war and it is a battle and we need to get involved. Too many Christians do not realize that we are in a battle, and that is a tragedy. So shake your fellow Christians up that are out of the game, that are checked out, that don't think that we are in a spiritual battle. Show them Ephesians 6 that it assumes that we're in a battle, and get them involved, get them engaged, and let's go out and be successful together.